Good morning, Sunday morning.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
We are back. Boy, I wish I had had some more time for that last phone call. It was a great question. But we're on a clock. What can I say? 888-914-9149. Have some questions that have come my way on Twitter. One of them is from Riley, who says, I know that movies aren't accurate, but I was wondering about the portrayal of demons. Most movies portray the demons as people who died previously, but doesn't the church teach that demons are fallen angels? I was hoping you could explain this. Well, happy to. I'm not sure which movies you have in mind, and for all I know, there may be many movies that portray demons as former human beings. I just can't think of a movie where I've seen that. So if you want to follow up with me on Twitter and send me an example or two, that would be great. But in the meantime, you're absolutely right. The church teaches that there's a utter and, I'm trying to find the right words here, there's a complete and utter distinction between angelic beings and human beings. So for one thing, human beings do not become angels when we die. When we die, we go on to heaven. We're disembodied souls. Eventually, we'll get our bodies back, but we remain human by nature. Angels are pure spirits. They're, as I was saying earlier, their spirits are not made for bodies. Our souls are made for bodies, and we interact with our body. We can do more things than what we can do with our body alone, but we are not like the angels who have no need of a body at all. So that's one way in which we can see that human beings do not change and become angels, even though that's probably far more common, it seems to me, would be this idea that human beings become angels. We get our wings or something like that. Maybe that was popularized by It's a Wonderful Life. Maybe things like that got people to thinking like that. But no, no human being becomes a demon. The demons are simply the fallen angels who, when the angels are created by God, they didn't pass their test, and so they were immediately cast down. And it seems that there are fewer in number than the good angels, but there are many of the demons. How many, we don't know. But that's who they are. I'm glad you asked the question on Twitter. And that goes, anyone out there, if you have a question that you can't call in with and you want to ask a question on Twitter, by all means, send it to me there. My address is at Patrick Madrid. This is a little comment from Kim Lartigue. She says, robust enforcement policies, which is a phrase from an article that I read a little while ago. She says, robust enforcement policies sounds like a cool garage band name. And I agree with you. That will have to go on the list. I agree. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Let's get you on the air. Let's start off now with Bob. Good morning, Bob. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Patrick. How are you this morning?
I am well, thank you.
Yeah, I really enjoy your show. Thank you for what you do. And the reason why I'm calling is I sort of find myself in a dilemma. I've been a member of the same parish, my wife and my family. We raised our kids in this church for about 32 years now. We have five young adult children. And lately, though, I've always been a proponent of supporting the local church no matter what. Obviously, in 32 years, pastors come and go. You don't always see eye to eye with your pastor and agree with everything they do. But I've always been a proponent of that the Eucharist is why you go to church. It's not about the pastor. So you always support the local church, because if you don't support the local church, participation's going to dwindle, and you're going to see the local churches die, so to speak. And I've always wanted to be somebody that lifts the local church up.
Okay.
Well, our pastor, who I really respect and have liked over the years, has really been going off the rails in my mind over the last, since this coronavirus. And he had a homily several months ago about the riots. And if we don't understand the riots, or if we think the riots are bad, then we're essentially racist, was what I took away from his homily. And then recently, he stood up there and he was talking about that he's going to not refuse the Eucharist to anybody, and he stands behind the church for not administering communion to President Biden, despite his stand on abortion. Mm-hmm. And he was went on to say that, did I hear all your confessions? And he's pointing his finger at everybody. I hear all your confessions. And, you know, statistics say that 65% of Catholics don't believe in the true presence of the Eucharist, and so on and so forth. But I'm thinking to myself, well, if you start handing out or lobbing soft messages like this or watered down messages like this, maybe people don't understand the significance of taking the Eucharist, and maybe that's why 65% of the parishioners don't believe in the presence.
Okay, Bob. So all of that being the case, I'm sorry that things are going that direction for you. So all of that being the case, what is the question you want to ask me?
Oh, okay. So, all right. So my young adult children, my son primarily, has been attending the Latin Mass. And it's very reverent, and it, you know, it disgusts him basically when he comes to our parish, and we're not even kneeling because we're having mm-hmm. Mass in the gym and people aren't kneeling.
I get it. So how would you fashion this into a question? If you want to ask me a question, how would you put it?
Okay, so the question is, so he's been attending this Latin Mass, and so this past Sunday, I attended, our family went to the Latin Mass, and it was ironic because the attendance was an all-time high, and I thought that was ironic based on what's going on within the church right now. But anyways, it was very encouraging because there's a lot of young families.
Hey, Bob, forgive me, but we can't continue this way. I'm sure you're leading up to some question, but help me out and tell me what it is. Otherwise, I've got to press on.
So my question is, what do I do as a parishioner? Do I leave my local church where I have friends, or do I?
Yeah, I would say do that. That would be, I have a feeling that would probably lower your blood pressure, which is a good thing, right? You probably would be able to assist at Mass and not be distracted or angry if the pastor has decided to become political in this way. That's unfortunate, to say the least. He shouldn't do that. But you can't fight City Hall in some cases. And my experience has been that if this is the direction the priest is going in, and if he's becoming radicalized and perhaps irresponsible in fulfilling his duties as priest, well, one thing you can do, because you're permitted to do so by the church's law, would be to go to a different parish. Now, I'm not a fan of parish shopping, so to speak, but sometimes you can't help it. If stuff is just getting crazy at your parish and you don't want to deal with the crazy, you go find a place that's not crazy. And that seems to settle things down. So that would be my recommendation. And thankfully, in your metro area in Tampa, there are many, many parishes to choose from. So that'd be my sincere advice, Bob. I hope that's helpful to you, and thank you. Let's go now to Isabel in Whittier. Hi, Isabel.
Hi, Patrick. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
I'm going to make this short and sweet.
Yes, ma'am.
So my question to you is this, because I've been asked this quite a bit of times, and now my young adult children are asking the same thing as well. Why is it that the Catholic Church is always has people living in fear? And what I mean by that is, if you don't go to church, you're going to go to hell. If you're having, you know, intimate relationships out of marriage, you're going to go to hell. And that's what I mean by that. If we don't follow certain criteria or we don't do certain things, we're in mortal sin, we're going to go to hell. And so I'm asking you that, why is it that the Catholic Church does that? And I don't know how to even answer this question to my young children who don't even want to go to Mass anymore, or young adults because they're over 18. And it's very disheartening to me, and I don't know what to do about it.
Okay, fair enough. It's an important question, and I feel the force of it myself, because I'm aware of the possibility of falling into sin. And if you fall into a mortal sin and die in the state of mortal sin, then you will go to hell. But your question really is, why does the church say this? I think the best answer is because Jesus said it over and over and over again. In Luke 13, verse 3, he says, "I tell you, unless you repent, you will all likewise perish." In Matthew 4, he says, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand." And throughout the Gospels, we see Jesus repeatedly. I mean, I've lost track of how many times he's done this, but, you know, many dozens of times he talks about repentance, turning away from sin, and if you don't, then you go to hell. So I think that maybe the best answer I can give you, and I realize it's not you that's asking the question per se, but for anyone who would ask this question, I would say because the founder of the Catholic Church, Jesus Christ himself, God himself, said that you must repent and avoid these sins, otherwise you'll go to hell. And I believe that he's God, so if he's God, he's not going to lie. And he also has a claim on my life, so I, as a follower of Jesus, accept that teaching, and I try to live accordingly. And when we fail, of course, we have, thankfully, the sacrament of confession. But the church would be remiss in its mission to preach the gospel if it left that part out. If the church didn't get around to reminding people of what Jesus said over and over and over again, then the church would be failing in its mission. So that's, in my book, that's why the church does that. I don't think the church does it quite as much, maybe, as somebody might characterize it. I don't get the doom and gloom or the hellfire and brimstone message from too many people in the church nowadays anyway. But it's there, but it's certainly not as pronounced as maybe in times gone by. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, well, that's actually a really good answer, and I'm going to start using that. What really frightens me is that none of my five kids go to Mass anymore. And they feel like I can't tell them what to do. And that is frightening to me because they're obviously in a state of mortal sin. And I don't know how to drill this into them without always making them feel afraid. With other denominations, don't do what we do in the Catholic Church.
Well, that's to their detriment. You know, the full gospel includes the doctrine of hell. I wish it weren't so, Isabel. Of all the things that the Catholic Church teaches, of all the things that Jesus Christ himself taught, this is the one thing that I wish wasn't true, but it is true. So I can't offer you the magic thing to say, because there is no magic thing to say, but you can be a lot like Saint Monica, the mother of Saint Augustine, who racked her brain. She tried very hard for years to get her son to stop living a riotous life. And nothing she said or did worked. He was on the high road to hell, and she told him more than once, and it didn't matter. And eventually, it was her prayers that won the game. And he himself, as he wrote in his confessions, he identifies how his mother's persistence in prayer for him is what ultimately led to his conversion by God's grace. So there's a lesson for all of us parents there, I think.
Yeah, and you know, the worst thing about it is my older daughter's, her father-in-law is a deacon in the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And her and her husband don't attend regular Mass. And I don't even understand it. But mm-hmm. And that's all I've been doing is praying.
Mm-hmm. Pray, maybe encourage them to listen to this program or some of the other great programs. Well, they're all great programs here on Relevant Radio. What you could do is go to relevantradio.com and click on the tab for Get the App, and then text the link to that to your kids and just say, hey, I think you might enjoy this radio network. They've got all kinds of very interesting things on there. And maybe that could be the start of it for somebody else. Let me share a story with you, Isabel. It'd be very brief, I promise you. There was a young woman who called a program within the last year or so, I forget exactly, but she was late 20s, maybe mid to late 20s. And she started crying at a certain point in the call because she said that her life was basically very far from God. She wasn't praying. And as I recall, she said she was, living a very, I don't think she said promiscuous, but she said just living a very sinful lifestyle and had been for years and didn't care about God, wasn't praying. And her brother kept bugging her about listening to this program. And finally, she said, after a bunch of times of him bugging her about it, she finally turned on the radio and she started listening to it. And it just so happens, by pure happenstance, or maybe not happenstance, I happen to be talking about a book about hell that I talk about from time to time. And she was so intrigued by it. And what I was saying, she said, was that, for people who are on their way to hell, they might as well read this book so they know what it's going to be like when they get there. And she said that really piqued her curiosity. So she ordered the book, she read it. And so then she called and she said she had a massive 100% turnaround. And it was from one moment to the next, she had this profound conversion. And it was because her brother recommended that she listen to the program. So God works in ways just like that. And he might work that way with one or more of your kids.
Well,
book, Patrick, really quickly, if I may ask.
Mm-hmm. What was the question?
What's the name of the book?
Oh, the book is called The Dogma of Hell. I know it sounds awfully inviting, doesn't it? The Dogma of Hell. You can see it, or you see a picture of it if you want, by going to relevantradio.com/Patrick, and then you'll see a place where you can click for links, and you'll see a link for the book on hell. I don't benefit from that. I don't make any money from that. We're not selling that, but we do give a link to it. So if you wanted to get a copy, you can find it that way. But I recommend
Absolutely.
It because
They're
I've seen people have,
me.
Yeah, I've seen people have amazing conversions by reading that book.
Okay, Patrick. Well, you know, I'm going to buy that book for each one of my young adults and,
mm-hmm.
you know, put it in God's hands and,
yeah, and just say, I love you all, and I don't want you to go here. I just don't want you to go here,
right.
And it's because I love you.
Right.
And I'm sure they'll give you a funny look, but hey, you know?
They always do.
And just imagine what it will be like, Isabel. Just imagine what it will be like if one of them reads the book and says, oh my gosh, I've got to get back on the straight and narrow. Imagine your joy if that were to happen, right?
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's all I want for my children. And I have one.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? God created you for bigger things than this.
That's true. I think your phone is cutting in and out. Well, anyway, thank you, Isabel. I sure appreciate it. Let's go to Mike now in San Diego. Hi, Mike.
Buenos dias.
Buenos dias, senor.
Well, Patrick, I have a light question. So in a couple weeks, my mother and I are going to be in the Green Bay area. And so I know of the National Shrine of Our Lady of Good Hope. And I've also since heard of, I think it's called Holy Hill.
Yes.
This has been on my bucket list of places that I would like to go, and it's working itself out in a pretty awesome way. But when we get there, you know, I'm not sure how should we worship or what special things should we do. And I figured you probably have some suggestions, and maybe there's another different place we should go to. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering what your suggestion was.
Okay. Well, certainly Holy Hill is a wonderful place to go. It's just outside of Milwaukee. Their website is holyhill.com. There's really nothing special I would suggest to you, other than if you're making a pilgrimage to go to Mass, receive Holy Communion. If you can go to confession, that's great. Pray the rosary at the shrine. Bring your intentions with you. Holy Hill is a spectacular complex of buildings, but there's also a spectacular view. So just going there will be, I think, very inspirational for you. Then the Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help, that's the one in Champion, Wisconsin, not far from where our studios are in Green Bay. And that's a beautiful drive. It's out in the country, and the story of the Marian apparition there is quite amazing. In fact, it's the only approved Marian apparition in the United States. So
right.
I really think that's well worth your time. Cyrus, any other suggestions, since you are a native of, well, maybe not a native, but you've lived in that area for quite a long time. Any other suggestions for Mike?
Yeah, if you're going to be in Green Bay, check out the old St. Joseph Church on the grounds of the St. Norbert College. And there they have a shrine to St. Joseph. So well worth the
cool.
well
All
worth
right.
a visit.
Jim
the
is also
old St. Joseph Church.
Mm-hmm. Cyrus?
Oh, yes. So just look up, just Google St. Norbert College, and you'll find all the information you're looking for.
Yeah. So Jim is also
okay.
mentioning Our Lady of Grace Shrine in La Crosse. So that's a little distance away, but hopefully that'll help you, Mike. And if you want to see Holy Hill, take a look at holyhill.org.com. Fantastic place. I mean, doesn't get much better than that. I'll be right back. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. This hour is sponsored by Ave Maria Mutual Funds, where financial goals are aligned with pro-life values and fund decisions are based on investment fundamentals designed to preserve and grow wealth without violating moral beliefs. More information at AveMariaFunds.com.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Man, I haven't heard this song in a long time. This is maddeningly catchy.
Are you doing the dance?
No.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm not.
There's a reason there's not video footage of you doing the show.
That's one reason right there. And it'll stay that way, too. Well, so we have some audio, Sarah. So just real quick, I've got a story here from Newsweek about a Portland, Oregon teacher who told her fellow educators at the Beaverton School District to embrace anti-racist thinking or it will lead to being fired. In the clips surfacing on social media, sending social media a buzz. Now, this is from a few months ago on a Zoom conference. It was actually made public. I think you might have audio on this. I'm not sure. Yeah, you have the audio.
I do, yeah. So this
okay.
is...
So let me set it up just a little bit more. Okay. Eighth grade humanities teacher Catherine Watkins made her comments during the district's virtual equity summit published to YouTube by Parents Defending Education in late April, and clips of her comments were shared to social media, garnering, as you might imagine, many reactions. This is carried in Newsweek, of all places. So let's roll the audio. This is her speaking to her fellow educators in the Beaverton School District.
Catherine Watkins, eighth grade humanities teacher at Cedar Park Middle School, and my pronouns are she, her, we, and us. I'm going to say something that's not nice and not sweet, but it's true. If you're not evolving into an anti-racist educator, you're making yourself obsolete in this field of profession. Our district is only getting browner and browner with our children. And so,
Cyrus.
Obviously yes. You can't change your
Cyrus.
Melanin.
I need the duct tape. Hand it over.
I
notice you have a fresh roll at your desk. I'd like it.
I do. It's all wrapped
Hand
in
it over,
plastic.
Please.
It's going to take a second.
That's your emergency stash. Oh. I need it. Give me some of that because as we're playing this, I'm going to need to tape down the cranium so it doesn't explode.
Here you go. Here
go
you
ahead go. And continue playing it.
Right? But you can change your mind so that you can actually function in a district that is full of BIPOC children. So if you're being resistant, I understand that, but you're going to have to eventually come to the light, because if you're going to keep with those old views of colonialism, it's going to lead to being fired, because you're going to be doing damage to our children, trauma. And so as we fire the teachers who sexually abuse our children, we will be firing the teachers who do racist things to our children and traumatize them.
What'd you just say?
And while our district might not be completely on there, OEA is working on it, all right? NEA is working on it. And so it's just a matter of time. So it's like you either evolve or dissolve. You've got to start walking with us.
Okay.
What? What?
She says, so as we fire the teachers who sexually abuse our children, we will be firing the teachers who do racist things to our children and traumatize them. You either evolve or dissolve. That's clever, that last part there. But parents, it's dingbats like her who are winning the day when it comes to promoting these aberrant and destructive ideologies. You either evolve or dissolve, Cyrus. That's how it goes. If you don't believe in evolving, I'm sorry, you're getting fired.
So let's see, she's combining, inappropriately having, I don't even know how to say it on the air, with racism now.
Well,
these are the same people.
Her purported idea of racism is that if you don't go with, in other words, what she's saying is, if you don't go along with the program, if you don't become like me and ferret out racism in anybody you see and challenge their colonial views, whatever that may be, if they're not sufficiently outraged, if they're not sufficiently self-loathing and groveling, then you're going to get fired. She's just letting you. And I'm guessing she's probably right. I mean, she's out of her mind. This is ridiculous on the face of it. But it is nincompoops like that who have gotten themselves into positions of power and influence, and they're winning. I hate to say it, but they're winning. So parents, I appeal to you, if your child is in a school district, then where is this? This is Beaverton School District.
Beaverton, Oregon. Yep.
Yeah. And wherever you may live, if your children are being subject to the ridiculous ideological rantings of people like her, then your kids are at risk. That's the only way I can put it. Your kids are at serious risk because they're not prepared to deal with that kind of thing. Chances are they're kids. Cyrus, what would you do if you found out that that lady was in charge of the, I don't know what, history department at your kid's public school? What would you do?
Well, Patrick,
you either evolve or dissolve. You've got to start walking with us.
Because if you don't, this is what you get when you mess with us.
If you don't, we'll consider you I can't even say it on the air.
She's going to call the karma police.
Yeah.
Because this is what you get if you mess with us.
See what you did there.
Yeah. All right.
Wow. And so,
it's going to take me an hour to get all this duct tape off.
I was, when I was looking at the story, I found another bit where the beginning of this little conference that these teachers are having, mm-hmm. The person in charge opens up the floor with saying, "Hey, I'm going to introduce everybody. And after I do, I want you to tell me what your preferred pronouns are."
Okay.
You want to hear it?
Sure.
I'm always up for a good laugh. I will ask you to introduce yourself. So I'm going to name you. And once I name you, please state your pronouns and the position you have in Beaverton School District. All right?
So I think only in good conscience now, I think everyone that you know, when you take a call from Mike or Barbara, mm-hmm. You probably should ask them what their preferred pronouns are.
Ain't no way. This is a preferred pronouns free environment.
You're the same as man.
Hey man, I'm going to evolve. Let them dissolve.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm not going to let them dissolve on my time. No, this is a preferred pronouns free broadcast. We don't do that here because it's foolishness. It's nonsense, and I don't accept. And I know you don't either, Cyrus. But you notice how she says, "When I name you," I just thought that was a little bit interesting. When I name you, who gave you the authority to name me? I know what she meant, though. She meant when I call your name.
Yeah, that little bit's the least of what bothers me about that whole thing.
Let's go to Mike in Wilmington, North Carolina. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I had a comment about the comments that were just made. I'm a teacher as well. Mm-hmm. And I taught middle school for 20 plus years, and she sounds younger, and she's an educator, which means she doesn't have administrative power, if that's mm-hmm. a word we want to use. But what happens when teachers like that say things like that, they paint administrations into a corner, which means they have to back up and try to fix what was said. And unfortunately, her voice isn't what... I don't think that's the majority of what people in education really think.
I hope not.
And I just want to, no. And I'm not defending anything she says. I'm not defending any of that. Because what that means is it's an indoctrination process. Mm-hmm. And education has too many of those indoctrinations in place right now. Mm-hmm. And my point is not all educators think that way. And I think there's a minimal number of people who think that way, but they have the bully pulpit right now, and mm-hmm. they knock the gavel, and they can turn the volume down on people like me.
So you're in that world. Are you still teaching right now?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay.
I love it.
Now, I don't want to make your life uncomfortable by, people listening to this phone call and, ratting you out or anything.
Right.
But you're in that world. Why is it? I'm not in that world, so I can only view it from the outside, but it appears to me that it's the quacks, it's the dingbats, like people like this who wind up running the show. Yeah. How do they do that if most teachers don't hold these crazy extremist views? How do the extremists like her wind up pushing the agenda forward?
most teachers don't go into administration. What happens is, if you're going to go into administration education, you can do it two ways. You can go through, I went through, I'm in the trenches every day, and I've been in the trenches over 20 years, and that's how I continue to do what I do. Some people, they can't hack it, or they go straight into administration right out of college, and they have a certain pedigree that they need to continue to promote.
Well, fair enough, and I understand sort of the academic process of doing that, but why is it, if she's just a teacher, and I don't mean that in a demeaning way to any teachers, but if that's her province or her sphere of influence, and maybe all the other teachers who think like she does, what's happening in the world of the administrators where they allow somebody like that to set the agenda, even if she's not an administrator? The reason I asked the question, Mike, is because we see this all over the place now. It's not isolated anymore. It's everywhere. And so I'm still puzzling over, if the majority of people feel like you do and like I do, why don't they just shut this down? Why don't they just say, stop it? You know, go teach. Stop this. Why don't they do that? Because it seems like if they did that or more of that, then the problem would abate somewhat. What do you think?
Well, we got an email at the end of this year. It's probably late May. And they are rewriting the social studies curriculum in North Carolina. And my principal stated clearly and put it in quotes that it does not reflect critical race theory. And he said, nowhere is that language used. I said, the language doesn't, that phrase doesn't have to be used to scare anybody off. It's just a matter of how it's being conducted and taught in the classroom. My thinking is that teacher from Beaverton may have spoke completely out of course, and it'd be interesting to see what happened to her after that phone call, if there was any kind of recourse against her.
That would be interesting.
Chances are an administrator, right? Because I don't think a district is going to espouse that loudly, although it is Oregon. I'm not putting that too far away from them. But I don't think they would paint themselves into a corner that badly.
Yeah.
That's all. I would be curious to see what happened to her after that. Was she applauded or was she scolded? Was she, you know, that would be my question.
You can see in the video that there's other teachers sitting there nodding their heads. Like, yes, speak the truth.
They're into it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Mike.
Well, it is Beaverton. It is Oregon. It's Beaverton, Oregon. And if history tells us anything the last couple of years, look what happened in that state.
And you notice what she did, Mike, is she compared the teachers who don't buy into the critical race theory with pedophiles. She basically lumped them in the same category just because they're
and
not going
along
with this.
And that's what they do. It's educational terrorism.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is.
That's
right. They scare the heck out of anybody. And if they say things, it's basically Gestapo tactics, and it's just put into the world of education because there's so many ears listening that oftentimes if the teacher says it, a lot of the kids will believe it because they're young and impressionable, and they think that their teacher should be telling them the right thing and not lying.
Yeah, and the parents are at home trusting that the teachers are teaching and not indoctrinating, and so it goes. Well, Mike, thank you. I hope that you are successful in bringing some sanity and some light to this situation that you find yourself in. Thanks for calling. Great call, by the way. Now, kind of building on what Mike just talked about, here is some audio of a Fairfax, Virginia PTA leader who's addressing the PTA meeting on this very issue of critical race theory, and in particular, the people, the parents who oppose critical race theory being foisted on their kids in school. Her name is, where is her name here? Michelle Leet, I believe is her name. She served as in past tense, as the vice president of training. PTA fired her, and you're going to hear why in just a second. It says, the actions and rhetoric of Ms. Leet and all of the like-minded partisan supporters are deeply disappointing. It evinces a deep lack of concern for children and parents, particularly where the well-being of the children and families clashes with political considerations. The resignation came after Leet was recorded at a rally denouncing opponents of critical race theory, and here's what she said.
Let's prepare our children for a world they deserve. Let's deny this off-key band of people that are anti-education, anti-teacher, anti-equity, anti-history, anti-racial reckoning, anti-opportunities, anti-health people, anti-diversity, anti-platform, anti-science, anti-change agent, anti-social justice, anti-healthcare, anti-worker, anti-LGBTQ+, anti-children, anti-healthcare, anti-worker, anti-environment, anti-emissions policy change, anti-inclusion, anti-live and let live people. Let them die. Don't let these uncomfortable people...
Let those people that think mm-hmm. different than me die.
This was at Luther Jackson Middle School in Falls Church, Virginia. Let them die, she says. Now, notice this is interesting, Cyrus, because in the transcript of the audio, she says, let's deny this off-key band of people that are anti-education. I think she covered the waterfront here. She brought up some categories I didn't even know existed. Anti-education, anti-teacher, anti-equity, anti-history, anti-racial, anti-opportunities, anti-help people. I didn't know that was a category.
Those help people.
Those anti-help people, they're the worst.
They're the worst.
Anti-diversity. Now, here's where it says inaudible. I think I understood what she said. Anti-fatwa. She goes, we can listen to it again. We don't have to. I don't want to subject people to it again, but... Anti-help people, anti-diversity, anti-fatwa, anti-science, anti-change agent, anti-social justice, anti-healthcare, anti-worker, anti-LGBTQ+, anti-children, anti-healthcare, anti-worker, anti-environment, anti-admissions, policy change, anti-inclusion, anti-live and let live, let them die. I mean, it's almost like a Saturday Night Live skit, except it's not.
No.
By the way, I am anti-fatwa. I am four square in that category. I don't want anybody putting a fatwa out.
So is this a case of what we saw in Beaverton, but there were some consequences for it?
She got fired. She was the vice president of training. Could you imagine sitting through a training session like that without going unconscious?
Sitting there, what have I gotten myself into?
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so, hey, parents, you know, I don't enjoy playing stuff like this. I don't enjoy even really talking about stuff like this, but somebody's got to bring this out in the open. I don't think CNN's going to do that. Pretty confident the LA Times, the New York Times, and USA Today are not going to do that. So I'm doing it as a public service so that you're aware. You can take a peek inside what's going on and then take action. Accordingly, whatever that prudent action may be on your part. But if you don't know what's going on in the schools where your kids go, the kids are at risk. So that's the reason why we bring these things to your attention. It's not that we enjoy wading through them, quite the opposite, in fact. I think we're overdue for a break. Let's do that. We'll come back to your phone calls right after this. You're listening to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Don't you listen to what the man says.
Welcome back. By the way, if you are into Paul McCartney and the Beatles and such, Hulu has got a wonderful new Paul McCartney series. It's called McCartney 321, and I binged on, over the last couple of days, I think I've binged on maybe five of the episodes. Very, very good. Very insightful about what went into a lot of the writing and the work in the studio when it came to the music. So if that interests you, I'm really enjoying it, and I think you might find it as nice as well. We're going to get to the phones here in a second. First, though, I've got an email that came in, and I just had it here a second ago. So this is an email. Actually, I take it back. This is a caller who called in and wasn't able to get on the air but asked the question. This is how it's conveyed to me. The caller believes that Pope Francis will soon send out a pastoral letter or something to that effect saying that critical race theory or at least the principles that guide it, are compatible and should be part of Catholic teaching in schools. If that happened, if that happens, what would be, what would your reaction be? What should our response be? I got to tell you, I've never heard any tell about anything like that at all. I haven't heard anything about that. So, but let's just say, and I doubt seriously that anything like that would happen, but strange things have happened in my lifetime. So never say never, but I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think that that's likely at all to happen, but let's say it did happen. Well, going back to the discussion that we had earlier on the program today, if you go to this, the First Vatican Council, and the document you want to look at is Pastor Eternus, Eternal Shepherd, referring to Christ. That's the section of the council that dealt with the definition of papal infallibility. And there it provides the very specific parameters within which the church says that the Pope is, by virtue of his office as the Pope and successor of Peter, Bishop of Rome, he's preserved by the charism promised by Jesus from formally teaching error to the church. And it circumscribes what kind of conditions must be in place in order for this to be a charism. It doesn't mean the Pope has special information. It doesn't mean that the Pope is inspired. The church has never taught that, but rather it means that the Pope would be prevented from teaching error formally to the church under the conditions that are laid out. And it would have to do with faith and morals. This is not that. So if any given Pope were to express an opinion about something like social theory, like critical race theory, as an example, that would not fall under that defined area of what would be protected by papal infallibility. Papal infallibility might be considered like a guardrail on a twisty mountain road. It's there to prevent the Pope from driving the church over a cliff. So when you understand it in that sense, you realize that it's, in essence, papal infallibility is a charism promised by Christ that protects the church from a pope. I know it sounds weird to think of it that way, but in essence, that's what it amounts to. It's a negative protection. It prevents the pope from formally teaching error to the church on a matter of faith and morals, and this is not in a matter of faith and morals. It's a matter of opinion. And I'll give you an example. A pope whom I very much liked and revered, and to this day I still do, that's Pope John Paul II, now St. John Paul II. I think he made a big error when he kissed the Quran. He went to, I forget which country in the Middle East, and he was presented with a copy of the Quran, and he kissed it. And I think that was a very bad thing for him to do, because it was very confusing for a lot of people, and it caused a kind of scandal, because it seemed to suggest that the Pope revered the Quran as if it were, in fact, inspired scripture, which the Catholic Church does not accept. So there's an example, in this case, of a pope whom I very much admired in many respects, and yet he did something that was not teaching the church. He wasn't teaching on a matter of faith and morals. What I mean by that is he wasn't teaching. He performed an action. He did something that, in my view, was very unwise. And there's no harm in saying that. I mean, it is what it is. In retrospect, I believe it was a serious mistake. But in any case, that would be of a similar character if Pope Francis or some future pope were to decide to weigh in on something like this. It would be beyond the parameters that are laid down by the First Vatican Council. So I hope that's helpful to you, and I hope it's a topic we never have to worry about. Wouldn't that be great? Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Paul now in Minneapolis. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Patrick. I would like to introduce the Catholic principle of clearly naming something for purposes of discussion, like the Trinity as a term. And I would like to refine the discussion of what we've been hearing. They aren't Gestapo tactics, because the Gestapo was, in fact, a police. That's the Po in Gestapo, Geheime Stasi Police. And Geheime means secret, and this is not secret either.
Paul, I'm lost. I have no clue. I thought you said you wanted to talk about the Trinity. And for that matter, I didn't say Gestapo tactics. That's something that a caller said.
No, but that was a listener. And I was just saying, but what it is that we're listening.
But what are we referring to? Are we talking about the Trinity or what?
Oh, no, I'm still talking about the teachers and the teachers.
Okay.
And what we are, and I'm just saying, let's call it what it is. and what it is, like we call the Trinity what it is, even though it's not, you know, in the Bible, right? What it is, even though they don't say it, is it's agitprop, which is what the Soviets, or common term, or international communists in the 20th century referred to as agitation propaganda.
Right.
And the purpose of agitation propaganda is theatrical performance to intimidate your opponents. And it's very public, and it's all geared towards intimidation and indoctrination.
Yep. No argument for me.
And I think it's, and all I'm saying is, instead of us saying, oh, it's CRT, you know, we could call it agitprop. And then it's super clear. Nobody's going to call their own stuff agitprop, but that's what it is. And you should only use it as a shortcut to say this is a 20th century technique of Marxism that has been around for a long time. And it's the same old, same old. There's nothing new under the sun, as was it Solomon said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He did say that.
Oh.
Yeah, agitprop is a good word for it. I'm not sure how many people nowadays, especially the younger people, would have even heard that view. Many of them are not even aware that the Soviet Union once existed.
Absolutely. But I think you could probably still look up agitprop in Wikipedia, and they probably still fearlessly define what it is, even though it is what they do.
That's true. I don't disagree with your premise, but I would extend this and say that critical race theory is just one version of this. Maybe you've heard me talk about it before on the program, but critical race theory and some other ideologies as well are simply just they're retreads of classic Marxist strategy, which is to take the lower classes, the proletariat, and to pit them against the upper classes, the bourgeoisie and the political and financial elites. And to create that sense of agitation, agitprop is a great way to do that. And what we see here is just simply exchanging the terms for different terms. Different categories are being used. So brown skin is the proletariat, and white people are the bourgeoisie and the financial elites. It's the same playbook. It's the same game plan. It's just changing the words that are used. So I certainly agree with your premise that this kind of theatrical spectacle is intended to intimidate people. But I don't think that the caller, for what it's worth anyway, I don't think he was entirely wrong, because the Gestapo in Germany, they also operated as a way of intimidating people by coming for them. And And I think that was the point. I thought that was the point the caller was making.
And, you know, and certainly if you're going to dissolve by not evolving, perhaps that is suggesting that it the Gestapo is the next one down the line.
That's right. Yeah, that's for sure.
Or Star Team.
Yeah, exactly. And also your future crimes that you might commit, but you haven't committed them yet, but you might. Minority Report. Well, very good.
Well, very good. Thank you.
Thank you. No, I appreciate it very much. It's fascinating to consider these along the lines of political things that have come before. Cyrus, that reminds me of that song by Modern English, I'll Stop the World and Melt with You. So if you're not you personally, I'm not saying it to you, Cyrus, but if you're not going to evolve, then you have to dissolve. You better evolve or you're going to dissolve.
Maybe I heard that before.
I know. Maybe the theme song now should be I'll Stop the World and Melt with You. If you're not going to evolve, then you have to dissolve. FYI. So just putting that out there. Let's
you
go.
Either evolve or dissolve. You've got
That's
to
right.
start lying with us.
You've got to stop what with us? Lying with us? Or what did she say?
I don't listen.
What's that
listen
last word?
Real close.
Yeah.
Right,
what is she saying?
Go. You've got to start lying with us.
Lobbying with us?
Lobbying. Yeah. You got to stop lobbying with us. Yeah, that sounds right.
Interesting. I still don't understand. You got to start what?
You either evolve or dissolve. You've got to start one with us.
One with us?
I don't grasp it.
I don't know.
I don't get it. All right. Well, on that happy note, we're about to start our third hour. In just a moment, we'll be getting to your phone calls as well. The number to dial is 888-914-9149. Plenty ahead, including your phone calls. Also, I want to share with you some new information about Google. We all use it, even in ways that you don't realize that you're using it, but there's something you should be aware of. in terms of Google and your private conversations. Hey, by the way, do you have what do they call those things? The Android phone? It's Google run, I guess. Some information about that. Half the planet, I think, is on iPhones. The other half, I think, are on Androids. And this information will, I think, catch your attention. If you want to send me a message on Twitter, my address there is @PatrickMadrid. You can send me an email as well by going to the show page, which is relevantradio.com/Patrick. Just look me up there and you'll be able to send me a message under the contact tab. I'll be looking forward to that. 888-914-9149. Lawrence on Twitter says the rumor is that Patrick did not use enough duct tape on the show this morning. We have it here at the ready, Lawrence. Don't worry. We have a big supply. I recommend you have some on hand as well. I'll be right back.